So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 101. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about General Grievous. As always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined with my co-host, Danya.
Hi everyone, hope you're doing okay and so on. We've had a long day already.
Have we? Yes, we have. And we also have Caitlin with us. Hey, Caitlin.
Woohoo! I am back again.
Yay, we're glad you're back. As always, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including The Last Jedi novelization. And I will say, one of my favorite audiobooks right now, I've listened through it all the way once, and I'll probably start it again, is From a Certain Point of View, the 40th anniversary book, because it's written by a lot of different people. So I will say I enjoy it, because it's just like a bunch of little audiobooks in one, which is really nice. So I like it. Check it out. We also have launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks include joining us in our recording studio and Discord chat. Movie nights, Danya was talking about, we just did our Revenge of the Sith audio commentary movie night. So you can, if you're a Patreon member, you can download that and listen to us while watching Revenge of the Sith all the way through. I may or may not make comments about I Am the Senate and Hello There, and all the prequel memes that have popped up, because it's wonderful.
I did bring up, if anyone is familiar with it, the terrible Chinese translation of Revenge of the Sith called Backstroke of the West. Which actually, seeing as Mikey was not aware of this...
Actually, you know what? The more you talk about it and the more I think about it, the more I think I've probably seen it. But it eluded me, so yes, I was not aware. I might have been, but I don't remember anymore.
Where?
It's all right. Keep going. I was not aware of it.
It's okay. Yeah, let's keep going.
Was an interesting conversation there, needless to say, that only Patreon members will get to hear and make fun of me for. Anyway, we also have After Dark episodes. If you can't afford to support us via Patreon, that is cool. We understand. Thank you for listening. But we also have t-shirts and buttons available on our website. Check those out at resistanceradio.net/shop. I think it's time for the news. Alright. First bit of news is actually kind of interesting. We got two specific episode 9 kind of notes that have popped up in the media. From one from John Boyega while he's on a media tour for what is that movie that he's in?
Pacific Rim.
The new Pacific Rim, yeah, sorry. It just eluded me as I'm pulling up the article. But John Boyega says episode 9 is all out war. It's going to be about war. But unlike, even more than the usual. Like, it's be all out war specifically. Which is interesting, because it almost makes me feel like they may not end... I don't know like how they're going to end the saga if it's all about war. Like, Return of the Jedi wasn't all out war. It was like a final battle station. Like, this was a last hope, but it wasn't really like all out war. It was a lot of planning and getting Han back from Jabba the Hutt and other things. So I'm excited to see this means.
The title's a little bit misleading, because if you read down, he doesn't have a script yet. It's just what he thinks it's going to be.
Yeah, and it's interesting. He thinks it's going to be that. Well, but you have to remember, they've all had conversations with J.J. Abrams. So he hasn't read the script. And then you also have to remember, the next article that we've also got from Daisy Ridley and Domhnall Gleeson, they both go ahead and talk to us a little bit about what they think their characters are going to do in episode 9. And again, all these people have talked to J.J. already. But they have a feeling... But they all have a feeling that J.J. is going to take them to somewhere unexpected for their characters. And that kind of ties in if they're doing all-out war. Like, imagine if it's all-out war for Finn and, like, those characters, what is, you know, Hux going to be doing? You know, he's obviously second in command still, but the, you know, hierarchy, you know, the dichotomy between him and Kylo has changed. Rey is now this new beacon of hope. And obviously she's going to have to be leading slash kind of what the Jedi generals were of the prequels kind of have to be. At least that's what I feel like. And it makes sense if it's all out war. I don't know. What do you guys think about these two things that popped up?
I mean, the thing of it is that war always has to, well, always has to end. It doesn't always have to end. Sometimes you keep fighting an endless war. We know that from real life.
That's why it's called the Star Wars, because it never ends. Get it? Star Wars.
But there's multiple wars.
Yeah, so you would assume that this war will have to end. Whether that's going to be from, like, Kylo Ren's death, or something putting a stop to them, or at least putting a stop to the First Order. You know, there's going to be some kind of definitive end here. And then I would imagine that some films that are like spin-offs potentially set post episode 9 will deal with like maybe some of the fallout of that, you know, upending the galaxy and removing like any kind of central government kind of thing. You know, like that. There's a lot about the galaxy right now that is in a flux. So... like, there is so much for them to explore.
Well, especially if you look at, like, technically the prequels are kind of like how they finally got from a time of peace, like, not peace, but kind of like almost like hidden war to full out war. Then the original series is them where, like, the bad guys have kind of won, but they're trying to reclaim it back.
Yeah, and it's the rebellion kind of, whereas like the prequels have the Galactic War, like full on war, and no one wants to go back to it, which is why the original trilogy is always kind of like marred by, it's like, we went through war before, we don't want to go back into it, but they are kind of back into it.
Yeah, and then it also reminds 20, like another generation, and they're kind of back to this whole kind of like this phase of what happened before that we hadn't really seen in the movies.
Yeah, I will say this. I think I'm excited to see where it goes, but I'm wondering if they're going to do what they did with like Last Jedi, if they're going to pick it up fairly quick after it, or if it's going to be like a 5-year gap. That would help explain what happened to Leia. That would help establish the resistance and Poe to be a leader. Finn to be kind of a leader in there. Like, I feel like it would also allow the characters to have evolved without having to explain too much. Does that make sense?
Well, and without them having to grieve all of these characters, because they still haven't fully, like, because it just started right after The Force Awakens, they never got a chance to really grieve Han Solo. Luke Skywalker is no longer in physical form. And then we're not sure yet how, but at some point General Leia is going to disappear. So if they give it a time gap, it gives everything to kind of settle from that, so you're not seeing them all like grieve all these great, amazing people to us characters in the story. They can reminisce, but they're not stuck in that initial grieving phase.
Yeah, and I think that would be interesting for them to kind of tie in and how it's going to go. Because again, between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, there was 4 years. And a year between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. So I don't think it has to be a direct continuation, since this is the only one that it's done it with. But we'll have to wait and see. We have Solo to look out to before and see which, you know, see how everyone loves it. And then we'll go from there.
I like the optimism. Mm-hmm. How everyone loves it.
Yes, yes. So, the next set of news we have is something I'm actually really excited for. Star Wars Forces of Destiny is back with Season 2. We received 8 new shorts, so not just a couple, but they released 8 of them on Disney's YouTube channel and on Disney.com. Also, on Monday, March 25th at 9:50, there'll be a special feature showing all 8 of them. So, if you are around on Monday the 25th, so the day after we release this episode, and
you mean Sunday?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, yeah, after we release it on Sunday, they'll feature these on Monday. Okay. If you go ahead and have Disney Channel, tune in at 9:50 on Disney Channel, and they will have a special feature showing all 8 episodes back to back to back, which I think is pretty cool. Considering that the new episodes feature kind of all the characters, you know, the first one that they released called Hasty Departure has Hera and Sabine and Chopper in it. Unexpected Company has Anakin and Padme and then Ahsoka. Shuttle Shock has Finn and Rose and BB-8. Jin's Trade obviously has Jin Erso with a little kind of street thief, if you will. Run, Rey, Run features Rey and Tito again. Bounty Hunted features Leia, Maz, and Chewbacca. And we also find out how Leia put together that Bounty Hunter costume in Return of the Jedi. You know, the Path Ahead is the Luke Skywalker Yoda one, which I think is also awesome because it ties into right into Empire Strikes Back. And of course, we have Porg Problems, which I will let you discuss on your own. Caitlin, I know you watched these. Which one of these were was your favorite?
I don't know. Like, I enjoyed them all, but nothing really, like, settled into the
favorite. I will tell you, I have two that are my favorites. Is Unexpected Company and Bounty Hunted are my favorites. Like, the Luke one was really cool, but I will say the Luke one was a little awkward.
Yeah.
Because you hear Mark Hamill's voice as Luke, but it's not young Mark Hamill like you had in the movie. It's Mark Hamill now, which is fine because it's still Luke, but he's playing young Luke Skywalker. It just seems odd. It was weird, but it was still good. But I will say my favorite is Unexpected Company because you see Anakin and Padme kind of get some alone time, right? And then Ahsoka shows up. And I thought it was just really funny. Yeah, you know, in the end, like, and Padme is like, it's okay that Ahsoka's coming. Anakin, you can see, is perturbed a little bit about it. But overall, like, it was good. It was a good little short. And in the end, it was good that Ahsoka went there because she helped save him. But I do like the Bounty Hunted one because it has Chewie and Leia, like, discussing, like, who are we meeting? Where are we going to go? Like, how are we going to get Han? And R2 is there and everything. And then they meet Maz. And she's like, Maz Kanata? Like, you know, really cool that Maz is there. And then she's like, there's the bounty hunter. That's what you're going to do. That's your outfit. And so they have to take down this bounty hunter together and everything. And it was just really fun. Plus, it also gave us a little bit of backstory to what happened in Return of the Jedi. So those are my favorites. Let us know what your favorites are on Twitter. Just tweet at us. And Caitlin, any you're sure? Nothing stood out to you?
Well, I just have a question, though.
Yeah.
Because when Leia meets Maz, she's like, oh, Han Solo's, like, told me so much about you.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, essentially I'm kind of wondering in what time frame did they do that? Because, like, we just got off episode 3. Sorry, I'm confusing myself now. 5. And mm-hmm. So episode 6 hasn't started yet, and so Leia had just told Han that she loved him just as he was being put in the carbonite. So at what point did Han communicate with Maz to the point where he would actually bring up a girl? Like, well, somebody that he kind of liked.
Well, he probably talked about, because remember, he would have had 4 years to talk to Maz. Because he met Leia in A New Hope, right? And it's 4 years between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And after Empire Strikes Back, Han is captured and put away, right? And we know Chewie knows Maz. And they even comment it in the short. And Maz is over 1,000 years old. She's like a Yoda, you know? So there's that. So, you know, so that's kind of what we know about her. You know, she's managed the Interstellar Cavern on Takodana for over 1,000 years. She was a former pirate and smuggler, so I think she's just a friend. Like, she's someone who she's gravitated towards Han and Chewie, and they have a good relationship with her. And I'm sure in those 4 years between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, Han has stopped by talk with Donna, had a drink, talked to Maz, find out about, you know, the the bounty on his heads, and he talked about Maz that he's hanging out with the Rebellion, and he's got this princess that he hates but he loves, And even, you know, Maz tells Chewie, like, she's a keeper. Tell Han I said that. Like, that makes, you know, like, it's definitely, like, she's like a mother to Han, if you will. Like, at least that's what I take from it. Yes, and I also saw that kind of in Force Awakens.
I just, like, kind of about Han as, like, kind of not talking about that kind of thing. Like, I feel like it'd be something that was forced. He was forced.
Well, I'm sure it was forced, like, he was talking about. I'm sure she forced it out of him. Like, think about it, like, when he's like, now don't draw a lot of attention and don't stare. Like, he walks in from Force Awakens, what we know about Maz Kanata. And instantly, she walks in, he's like, Han Solo! And, like, the entire cantina, music stops, everything stops. And then she said, where's my boyfriend? The Wookiee and everything like that. So, like, you know there's some relationship there. And so I'm sure it's something, and, you know, you see her also talk to Finn about, I've seen this in your eyes before. I've seen these, eyes tell stories. So, like, you know she's kind of like the mother to everybody, and I'm sure she kind of twisted it out of Han, and I'm sure by no help of Chewie, probably goading her, you know.
Chewie probably helped
get the information. But yeah, like I said, I really liked that Bounty Hunter one with Leia, Maz, and Chewie, just because it really tied the new trilogy to the original trilogy. It was a fun story, and it's 2 minutes long, so if you're ever bored on YouTube and you haven't watched it, check out the Star Wars Forces of Destiny.
Fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
Ready?
Yeah.
Anyone here a Voltron Legendary Defender fan?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, young Han Solo in Forces of Destiny is voiced by the same voice actor who plays Prince Lotor on Voltron Legendary Defender. AJ Lucasio voices young Han Solo in Forces of Destiny.
Huh, I did not know that.
Fun fact! It is a fun fact. I said it would be a fun fact.
There you go. Fun fact there. All right.
Yeah.
Moving on, Rian Johnson has started work on the new Star Wars trilogy. And it's really interesting. As I read the article and I go through it, he's talked about how he's excited. He's started to work on it, but he doesn't know where the actual story is going to be. He admitted that he still has to figure out what it's going to be, even though it's been approved by Lucasfilm. So I feel like when he went to Lucasfilm, he probably had a treatment, like a story of, like, this is what I want to explore. And right now he's trying to figure out the script, like the characters, like the beats and everything for it. So this is kind of cool that, you know, he's just finished, you know, The Last Jedi. It's coming out in DVD. He's had some time off. He's really kind of thought about what the film was. And then all of a sudden, like, he's now actually starting to work on the treatment for it. And I find it interesting because I feel like he's going to go ahead and complete a treatment for all three films and then work on the script for the first one before doing anything else, and finish the first one before he starts the script on the next film. Just because you don't want to know too much, because it paints you into a corner sometimes when you're writing a story if you map too much stuff out. But obviously some key things. Like, I think some broad strokes that are there is, like, J.K. Rowling and the 7-book series. Like, having some broad strokes and things from the last book show up in the second book and so on. Like, that really is probably the best way, but not have the story completely finished. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because, you know, without going into too much Harry Potter, we know the last book changed pretty significantly over the years.
Writing stories with sequels, it's the same idea.
Yeah, so same thing here. So I think him having some broad strokes of what it's going to be, I'm excited for it. But any excitement for this trilogy, Danya?
I mean, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, I really liked The Last Jedi a lot, and I really liked what Rian Johnson did with the series, and that he took it in a completely different direction. So for me, what's going to be really interesting is when he's not tied down with having to fold in the Skywalker legacy, what is he going to be capable of in terms of story and what he can do within this galaxy and this universe? Like, I think that's the most exciting part for me, because he had some incredible ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that to a certain extent, he was restricted with what he could and couldn't do. which, you know, by nature of, like, the fact that he's working on the Skywalker saga, everyone is going to have the same problem coming in with that. They have to adhere to that central storyline, because that's just how it goes. Whereas with the spin-off films, they have complete freedom to explore an entirely different place in the galaxy. So I think that's the most exciting part for me. What is Rian Johnson going to do when he doesn't have to tie into the Skywalker saga?
Yeah, because, like, I mean, he was fairly, like, I liked what he did when he was tied down, and the fact that, like, the amount of research and knowledge that he has to prepare for The Last Jedi. So I am very intrigued on what he's going to do with the free range.
I think it's really nice that what he did, because I think he comes at the franchise as a fan perspective. He did a lot of research. He does, you know, as much as people gave him flack for the way it took it, and a lot of things, decisions he made, you know, even me, it took me a while to get over some of the decisions he made and really just look at it and accept it the way it was. And I actually enjoy it now. I think as we talked about, my first viewing, I was not a fan of The Last Jedi. But you know, taking a look at it after multiple screenings of it in theater and at home, like, I really, really like what he did with it. And I really like the thought and the care he took into using force abilities and stuff we haven't seen, and really democratizing the use of the force versus, like, keeping it Sith and Jedi. And J.J. Abrams even started that with Snoke not being a Sith, but just being a dark side force user. Someone who's tapped into that. Like, I really liked where he did that, and I want to see where this goes. In fact, this leads us right to the next article, that the next bit of news that we have, is we finally learned a little bit more about Lor San Tekka. When you think back, Lor San Tekka was one of the first characters we're introduced to in The Force Awakens, who's quickly killed, but he's the one who has the missing map piece to Luke Skywalker and hands it over to Poe, right? So we never knew who Lor San Tekka was. Was he an ancient Jedi? Like, there were so many theories about it. I'm sure we've had quite a few of these theories on the show, right, Danya?
Yeah. I mean, we've discussed it and talked around it and tried to figure out, like, who he was, where he came from, how he knew the Resistance, how he knew Leia, like, why he felt so strongly about her being still being royalty to him.
Yep. So, and that's what's interesting. So the Poe Dameron comic started a year and a half ago, maybe. And the first issue was he was given the mission of trying to find a wise explorer who may know the path to Luke Skywalker, which is none other than Lor San Tekka. Well, 24 issues later, we finally get introduced to Lor San Tekka in the latest Poe Dameron comic, which I think is awesome. And in it, it really just reveals that, without, you know, spoiler alert if you haven't read it and you don't intend to, but spoiler alert, it basically reveals that Lor San Tekka is someone who is a believer in the old Jedi Order. The legends of the First Jedi Temple have always interested in him, but what's interesting is he's not just looking for Luke. In fact, he's not really even looking for Luke. That's something that Leia has asked him to do. But her response to him was to kind of find that he went looking for the First Jedi Temple. And well, guess what? Lor San Tekka has been looking for that same temple also. And that's just, they kind of aligned on their goals of what they want to find, just basically different. He is not a user of the Force. He has no sensitivity to it. But the really interesting thing is that there are some mysteries and relics still unexplained, and the most significant of which being a relic forged by both light and dark force side users, suggesting a history in which the Force was not divided. So, like, he has, you know, he's a historian, if you will. And so it's really interesting that there's even the line about a relic forged by both light and dark side force users, kind of what we're seeing right now in Rey and Kylo Ren, how they're both light and dark side force users, and they both believe each other can join them and be redeemed. So it's interesting to think that maybe there's this balance. We've kind of seen it a little bit with the Bendu, people say Grey Jedi and stuff. So not a super exciting comic, but it finally reveals something we've been looking for in 24 different comics, 24 different issues. So I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to flesh out the character a little bit more, because there was a lot about him that was still, like, largely a mystery. And I mean, there's still a bit about him that's still a mystery. Like, yeah, okay, he's, like, a historian, explorer, and, like, lifelong supporter of, like, the original Jedi Order, you know, but it's still kind of, like, calling her princess, well, she's still royalty to me. Like, that's the bit that I want to dig into a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Like, it'd be nice to know more about it, but we'll have to just wait and see if there's more release comic-wise, books, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I love about Star Wars, is that they do go ahead and add all those different things in through external media. So if this is something that you're interested in, you can dive into it. Mm-hmm. So I'm okay with it. I like it. All right. Any other news that we need to cover, guys? I think that was it. I think we covered most
of
it.
Yeah, I don't think that was much more.
No, it was a good news week. Anyway, it is time to talk a little bit about our spotlight topic. The droid General Grievous. Now, I will say, we literally just watched Revenge of the Sith. Like, it ended a half an hour ago. And I really, really like Grievous in this movie. I think we're not exposed to him enough, because we do see him a lot more in the Clone Wars series. And we're not exposed to him at all in Attack of the Clones. So he only showed up in one movie. And he kind of... I will be honest. I think without the Clone Wars series, he was kind of underwhelming as a villain. Does that make sense?
No, I absolutely agree with that. That's true. Like, the stuff that happens in Revenge of the Sith, like, some of the battle scenes with him in, and some of the stuff that he does isolated, is semi-impressive. But the Clone Wars series really, really makes him an interesting character.
Yeah, it really makes him a general and so on.
Yeah, if you take him just isolated in Revenge of the Sith without knowing anything else, he's kind of flat. There's not really much to him other than, you know, oh, hey, he's got four lightsabers and he can spin them around and that's kind of cool. But beyond that, there's not really much else to go on. Whereas the Clone Wars series really digs into him and fleshes him out, so to speak, and kind of gives him, like, motivations and that sort of thing. So you get to, like, see how he operates and how strong he is. Like, this guy is incredible. And he's such a...
He's... Hmm? I find him really creepy.
Yeah. I mean, he is also really creepy. That is true. But he's a really formidable adversary. So, you know, and you don't necessarily get that from just watching Revenge of the Sith, which is a shame because he's such an interesting character.
Yeah, he really is. So as we kind of go through who General Grievous was, I want to just start us to think about, like, what was our first impressions or theories of General Grievous when we first were introduced to him? I know we have to think back when we were exposed to Revenge of the Sith. I will say this, like, there was a short mini micro series of Clone Wars, which is no longer considered canon. And I know obviously there's a Clone Wars animated series that is canon. But do either of you guys remember that Clone Wars animated series? The one that was on Cartoon Network?
I never saw it. So I can't.
I'm thinking, like, which one? I'm trying to think which one.
Well, there was specifically, like, why he's caught. So it's interesting because they show Grievous taking the lightsabers in that animated series. It was done by the same artist who did Samurai Jack and stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about now.
Yeah. And so, like, it was absolutely phenomenal. If you get a chance, I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere.
In fact, it was like a little 2D animated.
Yeah, it's from 2003, yeah. Full series. Here it is. I just found it on YouTube. There's two seasons of it that they did. and it's 2 hours long, and I'm going to post it in our Discord chat, but I'll link to it at some point on our website. But it's a 2D animated, you know, Clone Wars, and it's the first time we actually were introduced to General Grievous. And the really cool thing about seeing General Grievous in this was he was exactly what you wanted him to be leading up to Revenge of the Sith. So this was released between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And the really cool part is season 2, the last episode, is literally kind of like what we had with Force Awakens leading up to The Last Jedi, where it's Rey handing the lightsaber to Luke, like how it picks up directly. The last episode of this picks up directly in Revenge of the Sith, where you see the Separatists attacking Coruscant. They've attacked the heart of the, you know, of the Republic, and you see Grievous kidnapping the Emperor. Now, we all know that the Emperor was going kind of freely. I don't know if Grievous ever knew that Chancellor Palpatine was actually Darth Sidious. Like, I don't know if he was in on that secret. Dooku was, but I don't know if Grievous ever was. But it's one of those things where he kidnapped the Chancellor and took him to his ship. And, of course, Anakin and Obi-Wan, at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, were to come up and you know, attack him. The really cool thing about this series, and the reason why I bring it up, and for me, I know I'm kind of going off on tangent, is there's two stories in here that are really interesting. There's a story with Mace Windu and a story with Grievous. You know, in Revenge of the Sith, you see Grievous has 4 lightsabers. Well, how did he get them? Well, as the Jedi are hunting Grievous, this new droid general, he drops down kind of almost like a spider or a bat, because he's kind of a bat species, if you will. And he kills them, like just like demolishes them. And he takes their lightsabers for his collection. And that's how he gets these lightsabers that he uses. It's not, he didn't make them. He's not force use sensitive. He literally just takes them from his fallen, you know, the fallen Jedi that he killed. And he's coughing inside Revenge of the Sith different times. And those who haven't seen this have always asked me, like, why? Like, I don't get it. I'm like, well, it's significant because you see Mace Windu demolish like 50 droids just with the force and everything. Way more BA than he is in the film, you know, getting thrown off and wanting to kill the Emperor. But he's just a super awesome Jedi and everything. And he fights Grievous after Grievous has taken these lightsabers and survives. And he wounds Grievous by using the force to damage his ribcage and his heart. So Grievous is choking because his lungs and heart are kind of have been crumpled recently in a battle with Mace Windu before Anakin and Obi-Wan have to go fight him. So I think in my first impressions of Grievous, if you will, and theories was this is someone who is just a strong determination and ridiculously scary. It just didn't come across in the movie, unfortunately. But well, yeah, that's my impression.
And that kind of leads to mine, because for the longest time, I got the impression that like something like similar that happened to like Anakin when he became Darth Vader. Like, if Anakin hadn't been like damaged and like half his body burned, he wouldn't have been in that suit, right? He still would have been Darth Vader, but he would have looked like Anakin. So I thought that originally Grievous had been whatever species it was, because at the time I didn't know what it was, and had been injured. And then this is how they repaired himself, is like he had like part of his like face left, and he had like his heart, and this is the body that he ended up getting. But then like I realized after the fact he chose to do that, which speaks to, one, his scariness, his strength, and his determination, because somebody asked him why he continually does this to himself, and he's like, because he always has to be better.
Mm-hmm. Danya, any thoughts, general thoughts on Grievous?
Yeah, I mean, I really like him as a villain. I wish we'd gotten to spend more time with him in Revenge of the Sith. I mean, we talked about it, we went into it a little bit in the audio commentary about like how I thought everything that happened with Revenge of the Sith was really interesting. It's definitely the best of the prequel films, but I feel like it could have gone through another round of edits and things could have been moved around and made slightly more interesting, and it was way, 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 way too long. And I feel like more could have been done with him, because I really like him.
Do you think they made a grievous mistake not developing him?
That's why I named it that.
I know. But, I had to work it in here somewhere. Like, think about it. Like, I think they could have developed his character more on film. Significantly more. And even, they developed him quite a bit in the Clone Wars animated series. Like, the full, over the 6 seasons. Because that does lead us into our next part of it. You know, he is the supreme commander of the droid army during the Clone Wars. And he is, like Vader, part droid. There's been comparisons of him, Darth Maul, and Darth Sidious. That these are all like the three Padawans or the three kind of villains in the prequels is what leads up, like it's what makes up Anakin Skywalker to be Darth Vader. You know, you have someone who is like Maul, who is just pure, you know, finesse and everything that he is. Then you have the Count Dooku, the Darth Tyrannus, and then you have the machine that is also, you know, what Anakin becomes, and he becomes Darth Vader. So I think there's a lot of hidden stuff between him and the other apprentices that we see in the series. Especially when you consider, like, I think me and Donnie were talking about this when we did the commentary. When you think that in Revenge of the Sith, he is the main villain until Anakin turns to Darth Vader, because you have Count Dooku dispatched and killed, even though he was the main villain in Attack of the Clones, within the first 15 minutes of the film. Like, so it all is down on Grievous, and in fact, the war won't end while Grievous is still at large. Well, so Grievous definitely has, like I said, he is the supreme commander of the droid army during this time of war.
And, like, I don't know if it's too early to discuss this, but, like, I kind of, like, I rewatched the fight before this, and I think, like, again, having never watched Clone Wars before, watching Revenge of the Sith, it kind of, like, you have that limited time with General Grievous to kind of figure out who he is. But after watching the Clone Wars and seeing how many times he escaped from being removed from, like, I guess the story, it's kind of weird that it up and ended in 5 minutes. Like, I feel like that would have been, like, a whole episode if it had occurred in the Clone War show.
Yeah, it really does. So, it's interesting the way he is. And when you think about it also, like, we think about it, I do want to focus a little bit more on the movies than on the Clone War series. But when you think about it, you know, he knows, like, he even tells Kenobi, I've been trained in your Jedi arts, which he's talking about specifically, you know, lightsaber combat. By Count Dooku, and you see, you know, he has fought other Jedi before. That's how he has them. We know this. We also see him fight, like, Ahsoka Tano in, you know, the Clone Wars series. So he has a skill set, and he tells that to Kenobi in the film. And he's even engaged Kenobi before, you know, in different episodes of the Clone Wars series. And obviously, as it comes to an end on Upatu, Revenge of the Sith, I will say I made this comment too. The way he fights, even though he's been trained in the Jedi arts, the way he fights is really, really goofy to me, because, like, he does this spinning hand thing, and because he's so mechanic, you know, he's such a machine, why wouldn't he just, like, spin around and just attack him nonstop versus, like, letting a single saber stop the four sabers attacking him from different angles? I don't know. I think me and you talked about this, Donya, because we thought it was really kind of goofy.
Yeah, just the, like, spinning, like, for no reason, and then he just stops. And it's like, you might want to keep doing that. Like,
well, I think...
What you doing?
Because, I mean, he does still have his original heart, right? So he, like, he is limited in that aspect. And, like, as you said, his lungs and rib kind of cage were damaged previously. But I think, like, in terms of the movie, I think they did that just to look impressive with their CGI effects.
Look impressive.
Yeah. Well, and then he's also cackling, and, like, he's dug, he, like, he's spinning the two ahead, and then the bottom ones, he's just dug into the ground to drag to look, to, like, I don't know, scare Obi-Wan off? I don't Like, as you said, like, it doesn't...
It has no purpose at all.
I think it's the attempt of, like, trying to get the same... Because, again, you didn't... You hadn't seen him before. It's supposed to give the same effect as when you meet Darth Maul in Episode 1 and he turns on both ends of his lightsaber. It's supposed to, like, be like, ooh, ah, you've never seen this before.
Except with, like, Darth Maul, it actually was kind of a holy crap moment.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the first time seeing that being really impressed and kind of, like, taken aback. But with, like, with Grievous, it's just unnecessary.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't make sense. Because he's literally just doing it to what? Look intimidating, except what intimidation is there? Because all he's doing is making sparks.
I think the other reason is he might be doing it to show off at, look at all these lightsabers I got from Jedi I've killed.
Yeah,
that'd like, be the only kind of thing more like nana nana boo boo kind of effect, as opposed to look at how impressive I am.
Yeah.
Well, as we go through Grievous, beyond his lightsaber skills and techniques, he was skilled enough to be able to attack the Republic capital of Coruscant, and he kidnapped the Emperor, or Chancellor Palpatine. Do you guys think he knew Chancellor Palpatine was Darth Sidious, the person he was working for?
No.
The million-dollar question, right?
I don't think
was it a trap? Or was it
was it a Grievous mistake?
I'll tell you this, like,
open for a second.
I'll be honest with you, like, on Grievous's capital ship, when Anakin and Obi-Wan go to rescue Palpatine, you know, Dooku knew, like, and there's a very obvious moment in the film when Dooku looked back at at Palpatine, saying he knew what was happening, especially when Palpatine told Anakin to kill him. And you know, Dooku just makes this look like, what? Like, why would you tell him that? Like, I'm your apprentice. I think it was an obvious thing. Like, I think Dooku probably put the idea of kidnapping the Chancellor in Grievous's ear, or ear hole, or whatever he has as ears, and got the idea going that we can attack and kidnap him. So Grievous is the one who does that, and he does a really good job of it. He obviously overpowers guards there on Coruscant, but I think it's also a matter of surprise, and also a little bit of Palpatine letting it happen, because he wanted an opportunity to tempt Anakin, if you will. And of course, Dooku is there to protect and guard the Emperor, you know, the Chancellor, while, you know, Grievous is elsewhere on the bridge getting him out of the firefight that is happening. And that's when we get our heroes to see, you know, to dispatch Darth Tyrannus to kill Dooku, which who we know obviously knew who Palpatine really was. But I think the fact that he didn't know just shows you that even as a big, you know, supreme commander of the droid army during the Clone Wars, he is still such a small pawn in Palpatine's bigger plans.
Oh, yeah. I think everybody's like a small pawn in his plan. Like, look how, like, quickly he dropped Count Dooku.
Yeah, and I think Count Dooku, and it's even the same thing with, like, look at Vader. Vader was possibly even a, replace when he looked at Ezra Bridger.
Yep.
Because he looked to see if Ezra Bridger would be his, you know.
Well, and I think that was, like, the whole point of the fight between Anakin and Count Dooku. Whoever won, he was going to be the one he kept. And then it just turned, like, so if he told Anakin to kill Count Dooku and he wasn't able to, then he would have allowed Count Dooku to kill Anakin, because Anakin was now no good to him.
Yeah, and I think that's what happens. It's like, you know, he has these plans. And it is interesting. So, you know, Darth Sidious tells Grievous where to take, that he tells them to take him to Mustafar. You know, takes all the leadership to Mustafar, which is what he wants them to do. But he also, as Chancellor Palpatine, leaks where Grievous is secretly meeting at and telling him to go. You know, on Upatu, where they end up sending Obi-Wan Kenobi, which I think was good that they sent Obi-Wan Kenobi to confront him, even though at this point, Anakin should have was on the council, but not a master. So he was not happy about that. And he also wasn't the one sent to go. But he felt like he should have gone. He should have been the one to go, or he should have been there to at least help Obi-Wan. So you definitely, the relationship that Dooku has with Palpatine is very different than the relationship that Grievous has with Palpatine. And Palpatine, you can see clearly here, he's pulling the strings on both sides, which we get to when we get Order 66. But going back to the fight with Duke, Obi-Wan, what do you guys think about that little race car, sidecar, motorcycle thing that Grievous rode versus Obi-Wan's Ractyl?
AKA
the horse. This is important because, like, here's the thing. It's like, so we know they fight. We talked, I don't want to get too much into it. Like, obviously, it's lightsaber battle, and it's cool, and I think we all said it looks awesome, and it's kind of perspective and a little showy the way he does it. But when it looks like he's going to lose and the clones attack, he ends up, running away, which is fine. Run to fight and live another day. He doesn't know anything is happening yet. He's told all the separatists to go to, Mustafar. He's probably going to try to get there himself. So he gets in this, motorcycle thing to run away. And I just cannot remember the name of what that's called. It's a wheel bike, officially, is what it's called. A TSMEU-6 personal wheel bike. See, I knew I'd find it and know what it was. But he gets on the wheel bike and runs away, and I love how Obi-Wan hops on a Varactyl, like this horse. And I brought this up to Danya, and Caitlin, I want your perspective, and Danya, I want you to tell our listeners. Do you think this Varactyl, a.k.a. a horse, could catch up to a motorcycle that gets a head start? Crickets.
Well, okay, so I guess the way to look at it is this horse, or whatever the proper name for it is, actually kind of reminds me of a combination. I guess the way, like, they're, don't get me wrong, they're real animals in Australia, but they remind me of two types of lizards that show up in Rescuers Down Under. And okay. One of those lizards, I don't know the name of them, and anyways, it has the ability to run so fast it can run on top of water.
Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So, I kind of feel like it's a possibility, plus the stuff, it is rough terrain. So, and
the bike might not be able to go over as easy.
Yeah, it's a local animal, so,
okay.
That's not the weirdest thing that happens in that movie.
Oh, no, it's not by any means, but it was just something like, as I watched it, I'm like, wait, he's got a lead start on this, something that's like mechanical and it's going really fast and everything. And then Obi-Wan like just hops on and is like, let's go. And of course he like rears up like a horse would. The Varactyl rears up and you're like, huh, how is he going to catch that? He's got like a, it's like if you're going 60 miles on the freeway and the other car can only go 25. I don't know. I don't know. I just feel like the Varactyl couldn't go as fast as the bike. But that's beside the point. During that fight with Kid, that's beside the point. All right, that was my thought there. But in the end, they end up fighting one last time, and it is Obi-Wan who ends up not killing him with a lightsaber because they've been fighting, but takes a blaster and shoots him right in the heart.
So uncivilized.
I know.
You mean he has a heart?
It is such an uncivilized thing, but it made him burst into flames. You know, it's like it hit whatever pieces of actual non-machine that he had, and it killed him, which I think was interesting. Well, like to have him be killed by Kenobi using a blaster.
I don't know if this like long-term affected it, but earlier in the fight, like Obi-Wan kind of tried prying at the protective cage. And I don't know if that expanded it enough that he could get that shot in, because why nobody had done that earlier, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, Kenobi had managed to rip open Grievous's cage plates, revealing Grievous's synth skin gut sac containing his remaining organs.
That, and also, if he was constantly trying to improve himself with cybernetics, would he not have gotten a more protective material or, like, coverage of his abdomen, considering that's his heart?
You know?
You think, but...
I think he made a Grievous mistake there.
Sorry. Every time.
It works every time. It does. It's you know, I'm sorry, General. That was definitely a Grievous mistake, not protecting your few actual organs still. But hey, guess what? It caught fire. It finally destroyed him, and the end of the Clone Wars was upon us. Because now that General Grievous has been captured or killed, they can stop, they can call off the war, and they executed Order 66. Which, again, was a Grievous mistake for Obi-Wan to actually kill him, because now, you know, Jedi are all dead. Guys, anything about General Grievous here? Like, I feel like we covered everything about him, because he is only in the film for so short, but I think he, you know, I don't know, like, I feel like Grievous could have been more. And the fact that he died the way he did, and, you know, he led the army. He was a great character for the cartoon series. But, I don't know. I feel like they underutilized him. And looking back, it's just one of those things where it's hard to wish there was more.
So,
now.
A thought.
Does that make sense?
If we're all in agreement that we felt like his death was kind of underwhelming, what would have made it whelming? Like, what would have satisfied you in his death?
I think what would have satisfied me would have been, like, Obi-Wan not killing him. Because, again, you have to remember, like, the Jedi way. But Obi-Wan actually defeating him and capturing him. Like, putting him in cuffs. Does that make sense? Like, that would have been, like, he would have been able to, you'll pay for your crimes type thing.
Yeah.
And... you know, it leaves his character open to be able to do something more, especially with after Order 66. Like, I feel like it could have changed so much more. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I feel like there's two ways I see it. I could have seen, like, if that had happened, I could have seen, like, once, Darth Sidious came into power, he would have been assassinated.
I don't know. I feel like he could have been like a right-hand man of like...
After Darth Vader?
Vader. Yeah. Like he could have worked. He could have been like the Inquisitors, if you will. Like considering that he learned the Jedi, you know, how to fight like a Jedi from Dooku. Like he could have worked alongside the Inquisitors and kind of did that, hunting down Jedi. And I think there could have been some cool stories like of him and Vader being something. You know what I mean? Like... I'm sure at some point he'd make a Grievous mistake and Vader would kill him because he's the other half machine. I'm going to work this in way too many times. Yep. I need to stop. But
I think that would have been interesting, actually, saying that having Vader and Grievous work together in some way, with Anakin having been someone who'd opposed him previously and fought him, like that would have been cool. Well,
and that would have totally given a different dynamic to his character and also to Anakin's character as Vader.
And they could have bonded over the cybernetic thing.
I know. Like I said, like, look at my hand does this. Well, look at my hand splits to become four. Okay, so, you know, I don't know. But that is General Grievous. And like I said, I do feel like his death was a little underwhelming, with the exception of Kenobi's line of, so, such an uncivilized weapon. You know, it's...
so uncivilized.
I know, so uncivilized. So good, so good. Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. And as always, I am Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.